This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Carolyn Heldman. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up on Sunday, October 2nd, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., the Aspen Fall Festival, a celebration of health, sustainability, and animals, will take place at Aspen Tree. The community partners include the Humane Society of the United States, Aspen Valley Hospital, Aspen Animal Shelter, Aspen Animal Hospital, Health and Human Services, Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, Aspen Yoga Society, Spring Cafe with Heart Healthy Meals, and others. My guests are Don Shepherd of Meatless Monday here in Aspen and Eden Vardy from Aspen Tree, together regenerating the environment through education. I asked Don to tell us how Meatless Monday got its start in Aspen.
Meatless Mondays is a joint venture between the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and the Mondays Campaign. And it really came together in 2004. And the purpose was to encourage people to eat less meat for their personal health and also for the health of the environment. And so we started Aspen Meatless Mondays 5 years ago here. And it's continued to be a really vibrant community here. And I really, this is something that I really is close to my heart because it addresses three things that are important to me. And one is health. I mean, I'm in the health and fitness business. And that's very important to me. Environmental sustainability, because the environment is very important to me. And the other thing is animals and actually a lot of other social justice issues tied to agriculture. So if we can get people to reduce their meat consumption, even by just going meatless one day per week, that actually has some really great effects on all of those things.
Were restaurants at one point were involved?
That's
I think
right.
many, or are they still?
Yes. Martin Oswald, who started this movement with me here 5 years ago, he's a really well-respected chef in Aspen, has a respect of, you know, the restaurant community here. And he went out and enrolled about 25 restaurants, I think, to offer a meatless option on Mondays through the summer. It's just to create some momentum and some awareness, and which was fantastic. And it really caught on, and actually the New York Times picked up on the story, and it coincided with Food and Wine that year. And so the New York Times did a story on Aspen Meatless Mondays and how Aspen was, you know, was going meatless on Mondays for the summer, and about our other partners, because our Martin got the 25 restaurants involved, but we also had Aspen Valley Hospital on board to really promote it, Aspen Middle School and Elementary School
with their school lunches.
Tenille and Folk, yep, for Meatless Mondays, University of Colorado School of Medicine was on board, the Aspen Club, Komen Aspen, a number of community partners. So it was a big push. And actually, Meatless Mondays, the Johns Hopkins branch in New York, gave us the honor of saying that we were the first community in the nation to take on Meatless Mondays. So that was a nice acknowledgement.
Has Meatless Mondays expanded to other cities around the country?
All over the world. I mean, Israel. And you have, a Sao Paulo, Brazil. There's all over the world, especially countries that are really facing a lot of environmental issues.
It is so confusing right now to be a consumer mm-hmm. in both the literal sense and just more in the broad sense of being a media consumer almost of what is the right thing to eat. Whole grains, is fat bad? Is fat good? Is low carb good? What is the science?
Well, you know, it's interesting because it's actually not that confusing. I mean, there's a big convergence of evidence right now that says our diet should consist primarily of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, and small amounts of meat. And that's for our health, you know, human health. And there's a lot of evidence that continues to build around that. What happens is that there can be maybe a small study or somebody's trying to sell a product or a program, and there's not a lot of scrutiny around that. And so the media loves something sensational. For instance, butter's back. You know, Time magazine had the cover. And that really, it wasn't based on good science, but it was kind of a sexy, cool thing, right? Because we all really want to believe that something that we think is bad is actually good for us. You know, we kind of hold on to that. And it's, but it does a disservice.
I'm aging myself.
Yeah.
But do you remember the movie? You won't remember it, but Sleeper with
Woody
Allen.
When in the capsule.
And everything that he knew that we all know was bad was good.
Right.
And it was one of the funny scenes, maybe.
Has he asked for anything special?
Yes, this morning for breakfast. He requested something called wheat germ, organic honey, and tiger's milk.
Oh, yes, those are the charmed substances that some years ago were felt to contain life-preserving properties.
You mean there was no deep fat? No steak or cream pies or hot fudge?
Those were thought to be unhealthy. Precisely the opposite of what we now know to be true.
Incredible.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. My guests are Don Shepherd from Meatless Mondays in Aspen and Eden Vardy. He's the executive director of Aspen Tree, Together Regenerating the Environment Through Education. They're talking about the Aspen Fall Festival, a celebration of health, sustainability, and animals that's taking place October 2nd from 10 until 2 at Aspen Tree at Cozy Point Ranch on Highway 82. There's been a little bit of attention paid to the amount of water, for example, that it takes to grow almonds as one thing. There's there's one thing that almonds are a hugely thirsty crop.
Right.
So how's that square with healthy eating and protecting the environment?
Well, I have to say that, you know, and Eden can probably speak to this too, cattle are much, much, much thirstier than almonds. And we consume in this country an enormous amount of cattle, a lot of cows. So a cow, I think, drinks like 30 to 40 gallons of water a day. And all the water that the crops, like alfalfa, is very thirsty. The water needed to maintain that cow and then to process that animal is huge. So to give you an idea, a quarter pound hamburger without cheese, just a quarter pound burger, takes 660 gallons worth of water. Right? Isn't that huge? And that's, you know, if you go to the Meatless Monday website, and Johns Hopkins has a lot of those numbers, and also the Environmental Working Group, you can go and, you know, find those numbers. But it's enormous. So almonds, yeah, they are a thirsty crop, but cows are much, much thirstier.
Are you both vegetarian?
I am.
I'm not. I eat meat if I slaughter it.
So you just, from farm to table, right in your house.
There you go.
Yeah. So tell me about the festival that's coming up and what's going to happen there and who all's taking part.
Okay. So it's October 2nd and it is, it's going to be a really fun day, 10 to 2, a lot of family focused activities. Like for kids, we have yoga for kids. You know, to come out and kids can do yoga. We have face painting, cookie decorating. And then we also have a panel discussion talking about the benefits of meat reduction. And just to reiterate too, the Meatless Monday program is not about being a vegetarian or vegan. It's about reducing our meat consumption. And so that's the focus of this event. So we have a panel discussion with Dr. Christina Miller, who's a physician in town, and Sandy Holmes, who's a registered dietitian from the hospital, who will talk about the health benefits of reducing meat consumption. And then we also have Eden will speak to the sustainability issues and the benefits to the environment by reducing our meat consumption. And then Aubyn Royal, she's a state director for the Humane Society of the United States, and she'll be talking about factory farming, which is where 98-99% of our animal protein comes from. She'll talk about factory farming and something called ag laws. And so if we can reduce our animal consumption, the benefit to the animals, hopefully, because we eat about 9 billion land animals a year. And if you notice, it's like, well, where are they all, right? 9 billion is a lot. And so where they are is in these factory farms. And they're
their
warehouses. And these animals never go outdoors. Their short lives are really miserable. And so if we all eat less animals, it'd be potentially a way to get them back on the land, which is where they belong.
I think we've all probably heard about the problem with big industrial meat production. Is, as a consumer, yet again, do can I believe when it says free range or cage free? Are those labels accurate?
You know, for me, those labels are just not quite enough. There's so much campaigning and you know, money behind these industries that a lot of those things that appear to look good on a label, in reality, really don't quite, they're just not quite up to muster. For
so
me, if
for it, example?
For example, cage-free,
yeah.
That what that really means is that, yes, the chickens are not living in a cage, but it doesn't say much to how much space the chicken has.
They're not running around a farmyard pecking at bugs and
they're
stuff.
Generally inside of a big warehouse. Oh. If you ever look at the folks that have to harvest the eggs, they're going in with full hazmat suits. And if a human has to go in with a hazmat suit, it's probably not a good environment for an animal to be in either. So for me, those labels are not quite enough. And if for the consumers that are looking for a viable option for meat products or for animal products, I would say go to your local farmer because you can see the animal, you can talk to him about or her how they're raised, and you can get a sense for if that really meets the values for what you want to put into your body and where you want to put your money.
Do you guys limit? I think, Ed, when we talked, and I forget what was happening then, I think you were embarking on a journey to only eat within, I think you'd given yourself a geographic boundary. Am I right in remembering this?
It's very likely. Well, I did actually, my senior thesis was I was going to eat just locally grown in the area around Aspen for the winter.
That's what it was.
wow, good memory. That was
did
actually
you succeed?
That was I did. I ate a lot of eggs because I was raising chickens. I ate some quinoa that was actually down from the San Luis Valley, and I ate some greenhouse greens. But I was, yeah, it was certainly challenging to make it happen, but it worked.
Did you stay healthy?
I think I did. Yeah, I mean, I probably ate more eggs than most people would consider it to be good, but I'm a pretty skinny guy, and I don't have any adverse reactions from them. And you know, I was walking out my front door and picking up those eggs 15 feet from where I slept. So,
and I think this is a broad misconception that eating cholesterol increases cholesterol. Not true.
You know, the new guidelines came out and that the government just issued, and they did take eggs and seafood kind of off the list in terms of. So what happens is before, you know, the government changes the guidelines every 5 years. So they put together a committee. Actually, they don't. It's an independent committee. So it's not, there's no government ties. That's very important for dietary guidelines. And so these are all like experts in public health and nutrition, and they comb the data, the evidence. And what they came up with, interestingly, is that to lean towards a plant-based diet, to really consume more fruits and vegetables, and then, you know, smaller amounts of meat, but not no meat, but just smaller amounts of meat, and that they took, you know, eggs and seafood off that, you know, that list of foods that are concerning for raising cholesterol. That, however, is not, I mean, there are, like Dr. Furman, you know, and some other people would say, not so fast. Mm, I think that's something to really, you know, be careful of here, but...
And just anecdotally, yeah. This isn't based on any scientific research, but I have family members that have high cholesterol and are actually very sensitive and will react pretty strongly from eating eggs. And when they've eaten my eggs, they don't get that same reaction. So, again, not scientific, but anecdotal that chickens that are raised in healthy environments, eating what they should be eating and getting those eggs fresh when they first are laid may have a difference in how it reacts in our bodies.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. My guests are Don Shepherd from Meatless Mondays in Aspen and Eden Vardy. He's the executive director of Aspen Tree, Together Regenerating the Environment Through Education. They're talking about the Aspen Fall Festival, a celebration of health, sustainability, and animals that's taking place October 2nd from 10 until 2 at Aspen Tree at Cozy Point Ranch on Highway 82. There was another explosive report about malfeasance in the food industry, where they uncovered documents that showed the sugar industry
right.
bribing right. doctors mm-hmm. to keep sugar out of the conversation about health.
Right.
And that sugar was fine and fat was bad.
Right.
And I forget what years those were, but it was back when we all believed that low fat, eat with abandon, whatever is called low calorie, low fat, mm-hmm. and don't worry about sugar.
Right.
So it's really tricky to be a consumer today.
You're very right about that. You know, we're manipulated. And whenever there's money involved, you know, there's a lot at stake. And so, you know, the thing with food companies or like a commodity like sugar, it's not about, oh, I want to always produce the great, these are more processed foods, a great product to improve people's health. It's about returns and, you know, making stockholders and other stakeholders in the company successful, you know, and happy as opposed to our health. There's a great book, Dr. David Kessler, who is a past president of the FDA, he wrote a book. It's called The End of Overeating. But it's more than that. He talks a lot about some of these. It's highly political. I mean, there's a lot of politics.
And he was the head of the
FDA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So bottom line, go ahead, Eden.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, it is difficult, but it's also a very exciting time to be a consumer right now, especially in the Roaring Fork Valley. There's such a plethora of young farmers and existing farmers that are doing a really amazing job. And, you know, there's also it's a cool thing now for a restaurant to carry ingredients that are genuinely good for us. So I think that while it's difficult when we're looking at the big picture, I think there are small things, especially in our local community, that are really positive, really practical, and actually fun to be a part of.
What do you all have out at the farm right now? What's happening at the farm?
Right now, the farm is actually getting ready for winter, so a lot of things are going to bed. However, we still have a great diversity of greens. It's because it's getting cold again. We've got spinach that's doing really well, kale, arugula. We still have a lot of our perennial herbs. Of course, our chickens are year-round, so they're still out there. And we just took our goats off, so we're not getting goat milk anymore.
Where do they go?
They stay around. It'd be the equivalent of being weaned. We wean them off, so they're no longer producing, and so they can get ready for winter.
And what other large animals do you have?
We've got alpacas, the Kona and Roy that people may recognize from the Aspen Saturday Market. And they're starting to put on their winter coat, which we then shear them in May and use their fiber for arts and crafts in our kids' programs. And we still have our bunnies are still out there. That's about it for animals besides some of the fish and turtles in the aquaponic system in the greenhouse.
At the fall festival, will the animals will be around?
Yeah, they'll be available for interactions and I'm sure they'll be curious as to what's going on and what all these people are doing out there. So they'll certainly be a part of the celebration. And the gardens will be open for exploration as well. We've got a self-guided tour that people can use. That's actually available for use year-round, so anyone can come by the farm park and basically participate in a self-guided tour. We run the facility like a town park, so it's always open. And at the festival, we'll have some more guided facilitation through the farm as well.
How did you all partner on this? How did it come to pass that you did this?
Let's see. I think, you know, I wanted to partner with somebody in the sustainability community to really talk about the importance of meat reduction. And Eden was just a great choice in that way. And because I think in the Valley with Aspen Meatless Monday, we've done a really, really, really good job with the health benefits. Like the hospital, again, has been a great partner. And there are some physicians who are really strong around plant-based nutrition. And so I felt like we've made a lot of headway that way. But the environmental piece, people are still, you know, are not all, there's not the awareness there on the importance of meat reduction for the environment. And Eden is, again, gets it. And so it was easy.
And I've just always been inspired by all that Dawn does in the community. And Sierra is such a natural and inspiring leader. And so when she asked if I'd be open to partnership, I was very excited and definitely really happy to step in. Yeah. Starting at this event, but hopefully on projects and initiatives long into the future. Mm-hmm. And while we do raise meat at the farm, it's not our primary product. Our farm is what's called an integrative farm. And so basically the animals that we raise on the farm are part of the farm ecosystem and perform a lot of other functions for the stability of the ecosystem. And then, you know, certain ones do get eaten, but they're there really as part of the greater ecosystem to make the soil healthy that contributes to being allowing us to grow lots of vegetables.
Do you sell meat?
At this point, we're not really selling any meat. Generally, the meat we raise is either for our farm-to-table free community meal or for different kind of events that we'll put on, sometimes for, you know, our generous donors and other things like that.
What are the fish? What about the fish?
The fish is still experimental at this point. Okay. It's our first time with an aquaponic system. We're raising tilapia in there. They are really more of the fertilizer resource for the plants that are part of that aquaculture ecosystem. And we are certainly nowhere near any kind of volume to sell that. And even if we were at a slightly larger volume, we would probably still use it for events.
That must have been quite an undertaking to start up a hydroponic farm.
Yeah, it's a little bit different than hydroponics because the hydroponics is basically water-based plants being grown. And aquaponic is where you actually incorporate the fish so the waste of the fish becomes the nutrients. And it's something that when we first designed the greenhouse, we really wanted to incorporate one into it because the greenhouse that we use, which is it's a growing dome, part of the growing spaces kind of kit that we've customized and shifted up a little bit, but based on heavily on the original growing spaces kit, they come with these big tanks in the back. And those tanks are actually for helping to regulate the temperature year-round. And so we kind of wanted to add function to those tanks. And aquaculture was kind of the pathway that we really wanted to step into for that.
Will you harvest sea vegetables or whatever greenery might grow in the aquaculture or hydroponic?
You know, the surface of the water, because since we're raising the fish in there, we put a lot of plants in for the fish to eat.
Okay.
And we were trying to raise duckweed, which a lot of people that have ponds see as a big nuisance. We were really trying to actively cultivate it because it's such a great feed source for fish. But it's also a great plant for humans. When I was in Israel, we used to pull a little bit of duckweed. They call it lemna there. And we would sprinkle it on our salads, and it's supposedly very high in omegas and has this nice lemony flavor. So that kind of thing. And, you know, possibly in the future, algae, different kind of algae we might grow out of there. But it's not a huge amount of water area where we could get substantial plant harvests. That's more kind of the ecosystem component that helps to nourish the rest of the greenhouse ecosystem.
How many chickens do you have?
Right now we're just shy of 100. Yeah, that's about the healthy capacity for our system there, based on roost and nesting space. If and when we have the opportunity to expand, or I guess when we get the opportunity to expand that cozy point, we'll certainly scale up our chicken system.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. My guests are Don Shepherd from Meatless Mondays in Aspen and Eden Vardy. He's the executive director of Aspen Tree, Together Regenerating the Environment Through Education. They're talking about the Aspen Fall Festival, a celebration of health, sustainability, and animals that's taking place October 2nd from 10 until 2 at Aspen Tree at Cozy Point Ranch on Highway 82. How do you deal with predators?
Predators are tough. Yeah, predators are really tough. Mostly through preventative measures, you know, having fencing, having the alpacas around helps to an extent. Having human pressure close by helps. But without someone living at the farm, which we do not have right now, it's very difficult to be actively kind of preventative with predators. So we did lose some chickens this year to coyotes, fox, and even a bear, actually.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
A bear killed a chicken?
A bear, yep. He took a handful of chickens. But it's part of it. You know, the bears were here before we were, and so we have to respect the bears and just set up our system in a way that can, you know, work effectively with the whole ecosystem and not try to say it's us or them kind of thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. So back to the day. Aspen Animal Shelter is going to be out there. Are they going to have adoptable critters?
They sure will. Yeah, Seth will be there with some great dogs, which will really be fun. And the Aspen Animal Hospital will also be there right next door and to ask questions, kind of an ask the vet opportunity for people as well. So they'll, and again, because this event is about, you know, a celebration of health, sustainability, and animals. So with Eden's farm animals, and then, you know, our companion animals, Seth representing that with, you know, with adoptable dogs. It'll be really fun.
And you're encouraging people to bring food, but they can also, there will be some food out there for purchasing?
Well, I'm not purchasing, but probably little tastes, like Spring Cafe has right. offered to donate some little munchies and heart healthy meals. Artis Hoffman and Peter Goldstein have a food business, which is, again, which is for really initially designed for people who are trying to recover or reverse heart disease. So there'll be with some munchies. I think Aspen Valley Hospital will also have just some munchies. So if you're a big eater, you might want to bring your own lunch that day.
Are you all actively out at the ranch? Are you selling or the greens and the...
We have two types of harvests at the farm. The first, which is actually the majority of the land, is designated as part of our farm park. And so the farm park has free-range harvesting for people that come and visit. Most of that is pretty much to bed by the time the event will be happening. But generally during the year, folks are encouraged to come in and just free-range harvest. And we actually, our free-ranging ethics at the farm are 1 in 20. So if you see 20 fruits, 20 apples or 20 plums, for example, or if you see 100 chives, you just take 1/20th of what you see. So then that leaves enough for the plant to regenerate and for other people to get to enjoy it as well. So that's available all the time. And so there'll also be some things, but again, a lot, we did an early putting to bed this year. And then we have a second kind of harvest at the farm, which is more market garden oriented. Obviously, for you know proper food handling requirements, it's not the best to have a bunch of kids and community members interfacing with the food all the time. So we have separated beds that are specifically for our market gardens and for the chefs that we serve.
Dawn, the event.
Yeah, it's free. So it'll be a really fun day, and you know the whole family can come, 10 to 2. You don't have to sign up; just come, and you don't have to come for the whole day. You might want to just come. People might. You can find a schedule. Actually, if you go on Facebook to the Aspen Meatless Monday page, you'll find the schedule there, and there'll also be flyers around town. Eden will have flowers. You can go to the animal shelter. There'll be flyers in the hospital, and you know posters will be distributed as well. So the event is at Cozy Point Ranch, and that's on Juniper Hill Road in Aspen, right on 82.
So look for the farm park. You'll see the geodesic dome from the highway, and we are going to be based right there in the farm park.
Dawn Shepherd of Meatless Mondays, Eden Vardy, Aspen Tree.
In the farm park.
The farm park out of Cozy Point. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Carolyn.
Thank you so much for having us.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. If you missed the show or would like to hear it again, go to our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Have a great afternoon.